All right, well, maybe we should get started. There's not a lot of beeping going on. Marcella, are you on the line?
Okay, I talked to her about 20 minutes ago, so I know she's coming, but we can just get started. So my name's Katie Brackenridge. I'm with the Partnership for Children and Youth, and I'm one of the co-chairs for the Quality Committee. And I think most of the people I've heard on the line have been part of the committee before. But before we get started, I just want to remind people that the role of the Quality Committee is to inform and advise the network, CDE, and the field at large on issues affecting program quality. And we try to do that in the spirit of cooperation, understanding that folks who may not be on the call may listen to the call in the future. So we want to make sure we're respectful for all of the different opinions and ideas that might be stated and might be felt in the broader world of out-of-school time. And I'd love to go around and do some quick introductions. So if, let's see, this is always challenging on conference calls. Okay, go ahead then. If you know Bruno who's on the call, why don't you call out people and we can...
I do. So Jen, you want to start us off?
Sure. I'm Jen Lilienstein. I'm the founder of Kismet.com, and I'm also the chair of the quality section of the NAA platform committee. So I'm really happy to be here today.
Great. Thank you. How about you, Corey?
Hi, everybody. This is Corey Newhouse from Public Profit. I'm on the call today to speak about the learning and after-school work group.
Great. How about you, Leon?
This is Leon Mostovoy. I'm the senior program consultant at Woodcraft Rangers. And really, this is my first. I'm just jumping in for Kathy, so I haven't been on these calls before. So I might do a lot of listening and hearing where we can take it from here.
Great. Thank you. How about you, Adrian?
Hi, I'm Adrian with the Youth Development Network.
Great. And how about you, Jhumpa?
Hi, my name is Jhumpa Bhattacharya, and I am with Development Without Limits West, which is a professional development and curriculum development organization.
Great. And that's it. So, Katie, did I get everyone?
You did. Oh, I hope so. I don't know.
I think
that's who I had on my list. Is anyone else on the call? Okay, great. So the focus of today's call, what we've done this year with the Quality Committee is try to have a focus for each of the calls that happen about every 2 months. And this month, what we wanted to look at was this learning and after school movement that was initiated by Sam Piha from Temescal Associates, and he's got a broadening range of people speaking for his movement. So we have Corey Newhouse here today to frame that the principles of learning and after school and some of the work that Sam and Michael Funk, who's been working with him, have been doing to help us all think about how we can position after school in terms of what it contributes to kids' learning. And I think, and Corey, you can jump in on this, but my understanding is, you know, for years we've been talking about what after-school programs contribute to kids' learning. And then Prop 49 happened, and in a lot of ways that allowed for school districts to have a lot more control and power over what after-school's role was. And in talking to principals and teachers across the state, what I hear very clearly is we also want to make sure in this No Child Left Behind environment that there's room for kids to be doing all of the things that they need to be doing in order to become successful adults in all ways, not just academics. So I think learning and after school is really an effort to define what that role is and what the specific principles and standards are that are needed to move kids towards a more holistic approach, not denying any of the value of, you know, the school day by any stretch, but really the idea of defining how after school and summer complement what happens in the school day. So I think, you know, what I wanted to do was bring these principles to the Quality Committee hear how they are, how they come to life in an actual program, which is why Leon, Sam reached out to you guys to see if you could talk a little bit to that when, after Corey has talked about the principles. And really explore with all of you, most of whom have some kind of a role in supporting after-school program quality, how those principles might play out in the work you're doing with program providers in the field. So that's our brief agenda for today. Every time we do these calls, we're also trying to link what we're talking about to the quality self-assessment tool, as a tool created by the network and promoted to help folks think about quality. And usually there's, you know, one domain within the network, within the quality self-assessment tool that our calls can be linked to. In this case, the learning and after-school principles really are embedded throughout the quality self-assessment tool and vice versa. So hopefully, and Corey can talk a little bit about a crosswalk she did with the quality self-assessment tool and some other assessment tools, that ideally, you know, you can use the QSAT or one of the other assessment tools to think about how well your principles are being implemented, and how well you're supporting kids in experiencing the learning and after-school principles that Corey's going to talk about next. So, Corey, if you want to maybe introduce yourself a little bit and why you have a role in this, and then talk a little bit about learning and after-school, that would be great.
Sure thing. Thanks so much, Katie, and good morning again, everyone. I'm calling you from wonderful downtown Oakland, and as you may have seen in the newspapers these days, it's been very eventful for us. So if you hear some sirens in the background that get a little loud, feel free to just let me know, and I can try to adjust my sound settings. So my role at Public Profit, for those of you who don't know me, we are an independent evaluation consulting firm. We primarily do work with after-school and other out-of-school time programs, most notably evaluating the ACEs and 21st Century programs citywide in Oakland and in San Francisco. And so my lens certainly on learning and after-school principles is as an evaluator and as a former youth worker, but I'll do my best to speak more broadly about the principles, recognizing that our purpose today is to think about how they can help to inform practice and continuous quality improvement. Couple things just to note about the learning and after school group and the principles themselves that I think are really powerful. As Katie mentioned, and as I'm sure you all are all very aware, the extended learning time conversation, which goes by many names, has been ascendant over the last few years and has been rather anxiety-provoking for many of us in the after-school world, with the concern that extended day equals more of same, and that same is not very good. And one of the purposes of the learning and after-school group, as well as the learning principles that I'm going to speak about in just a moment, is instead of talking about what extended day or out-of-school time is not, we're really trying to take a more positive approach and talk about what it is and can be. We feel that that is going to be a much more productive line of conversation and thought and action to take, rather than just saying no, 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 but instead to say let's do these things, because research shows that this is the best way to help encourage kids to learn in a really meaningful way. And so that said, the learning and after-school learning principles, there are five. The first is learning that is active. And by the way, all of this information is available to you on the Learning and After-School website, which you can get to via. Active learning is really just that hands-on component of out-of-school time learning, incorporating young lots of opportunities people to be doing hands-on learning, seeing, touching, hearing, doing, which really research has shown really helps us to learn in a deep way. Collaborative learning, again, research has shown that our brains are much more effective learning when we're doing things collaboratively and cooperatively with others, and so creating lots of opportunities for young people to work in teams and collaboratively is a really great way to help enhance those learning opportunities. The third principle is learning that is meaningful. By meaningful, we mean meaningful to the young person who's doing the learning. So this really gets at the heart of what a lot of us talk about as youth voices, as we all know from our own experiences, when we are personally interested in something, personally invested in it, our motivation to do a good job. Speaking of doing a good job, and I think this is one of the real unique contributions of learning support, the fourth principle is around learning that supports mastery, and that is really looking at in which activities and experiences are crafted over time and in concert with one another so that young people can be really good at something. And this was really resonant for me in particular, because I think that too often we don't tend to how the activities build on one another. Again, tapping into that intrinsic motivation, helping kids get really good at something, a way to keep them engaged. And finally, the fifth principle is around learning that expands horizons. This principle really speaks to the fact that in so many of our communities, young people have far too few opportunities to work with different kinds of people, do things, just to get a sense of what the world looks like.
Sorry, can you hold on? Is anyone else hearing the beeping or is that my phone?
Yes. I am hearing the beeping.
Okay, I was hoping it was my call waiting. Oh, no. I'm sorry, it's hard to track all of it with the beeping going on. Bruno, do you have any suggestions about how to manage that?
I don't. The beeping is certainly not coming from my end, so I'm guessing it is from someone that's on the line. So my suggestion would be for all of us, except for Corey, to push *6 to mute our lines. That would be my only suggestion to make
Bruno,
sure.
Bruno, I think somebody's got us on hold.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So I think that if everybody presses *6, we'll solve the problem.
Yeah, so please, if everyone can push *6 to mute your line, except for Corey, that would be great.
Well, Bruno, I don't think that doesn't help because they can't hear us. They've put us on hold.
They're the ones
causing the problem. So I hate to do this, guys, but should we hang up and redial in? That'll end the call, right?
We probably should. So, yes. Let's do that.
It seems to have stopped.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Please, don't put us on hold.
Yes, please don't put us on hold. Just put us on mute by pushing *6.
I'm just about to get to my Lady Gaga cover, so you guys can't put us on hold. Come on. Practicing for weeks.
Okay, wait, and then before you start again, Corey, there were a couple of other beeps going on. Did anyone else join us?
Yes, okay. Martha Hall.
Great. Excellent. Hi, Martha.
Hi.
And Martha, where are you?
San Bernardino County.
Great. Okay, anyone else joined in? Okay. So, Martha, we are in the midst of a discussion about learning in after school, which you may have heard about, but Corey's just briefing us on the five principles, and we're going to talk a little bit about how those come, what other resources and tools there are related to those, and then how they come to life in at Woodcraft Rangers. So, Corey, back to you. Sorry about that. I couldn't take it anymore.
So just as a quick recap, those five learning and after-school principles, which are based, I think it's important to know that they're based in brain science about how we understand that children actually learn. And those principles are learning that is active, learning that is collaborative, learning that is meaningful, and by that we mean meaningful to the young people who are doing the learning, learning that supports mastery, and learning that expands horizons. And so these principles are really flexible and applicable in a variety of settings. And so as you'll see, as you probably noticed, it's not specific to any particular kind of out-of-school time experience, but rather defining what all great out-of-school time experiences should look like for young people. And again, it's rooted in research about how we learn. A couple of tools and resources that are available on the website we hope will be helpful for you. We do, of course, have that statement of principles, which I mentioned earlier, which has a little bit more information about each of those five principles. Earlier this year, Sam and I co-authored a crosswalk between a number of publicly available evaluation tools and the learning and after-school principal. So that's things like the California Quality Self-Assessment Tool, the NIOS Observation Tool, the Weikert Center Youth Program Quality Assessment, among others. It's meant to be a companion to the really terrific resource from the Forum for Youth Investment that Nicole Yohalam wrote a couple years ago. One of the things that we found from that crosswalk is that none of the available tools really cover all of the learning principles really thoroughly. And so one of the things that's going to be coming very soon and will be available on the website is a self-assessment crafted specifically for those learning and after-school principles, particularly since so many of these are about what happens for kids over long periods of time, whereas many of the available tools are more kind of a snapshot-oriented kind of tool. We felt that it'd be important to develop a tool specifically for folks to do some self-assessment around those learning and after-school principles. And finally, Learning and After-School Group has a pretty active blog with a variety of guest posters, and as well as a really robust set of articles and research, again, demonstrating those links between how kids learn and what's going on in out-of-school time. For those who are interested, we're going to be hosting a conference in January 2012 in wonderful Berkeley, California, called How Kids Learn. It's going to be a TED Talk-style conference in which a variety of thought leaders from all different disciplines are going to be making brief presentations about how kids learn. And the idea behind this this conference is to be really different than what most of us see each other at various parts of the state throughout the year, that it's really bringing together multidisciplinary points of view about how kids learn with the goal of stimulating some thought and innovation within the out-of-school time field, again, drawing on what we're learning and what we already know about how young people learn. Finally, if you or your organization are available, we'd love for you to go on to the Learning and After School website and sign on as a supporter, either as an individual or on behalf of your organization, to help to demonstrate the growing number of people in California and around the country who really believe that out-of-school time can provide these really meaningful learning opportunities for young people. And with that, I'll happy to address any questions that you all may have. Once we take care of those, I think I'm going to turn it over to Leon, who's going to talk about how these principles are living and breathing at Woodcraft Rangers. You guys are just waiting for my Lady Gaga cover, I know.
I have a question. This is Jhumpa, and maybe this will be answered later on, so you, please feel free to tell me that with Leon's presentation. But I was just wondering if there's been any work in how these principles can come alive for different groups of after-school participants. So, for example, for English learners or for immigrant youth or for low-income youth, and maybe that's what Leon's going to talk about, so feel free to tell me to wait.
I think that a lot of what Leon is going to talk about is how those principles have helped to engage those traditionally underserved kids. More broadly, Jhumpa, I think that doing these principles well is going to put any after-school program or out-of-school time program into really good stead to really effectively serve English learners and other traditionally underrepresented groups. Mm-hmm. They're meant to be rather value-neutral in terms of what kinds of programs should be implementing these principles. But certainly so much of the principles are really emphasizing a learner-focused approach that they, by definition, are going to be effective for a variety of young people. And then there's also a fair number of articles on the Learning and After School website about some of the specifics about how a lot of these learning principles have been demonstrated to be very effective for traditionally underrepresented groups of kids.
Okay.
Well, I think another piece, this is Marcella on the line, is with the grant that is between San Diego, Sacramento, and Ventura County, it's supporting English learners in an after-school setting. I think there'd be a relatively easy way once the modules are out to kind of point out where there's consistency with those principles as well, because oftentimes in the best instructional strategies for students who are English learners tend to be more hands-on and experiential, so that way, you know, you could create kind of what Corey's already done is create crosswalks of what it actually looks like when being implemented.
Great. Thanks so much. Any other questions in general for Corey? All right. So, Leon, we wanted to just hear more about, or we wanted to hear about how Woodcraft Rangers has taken these principles and used them in any way for your program. Leon, are you there?
Yeah, hi. That's what I thought. Yeah, I was having problems with my phone. So I picked up the
camera. You're here now.
So anyways, you can hear me now?
Yes.
Can you? Okay, good. Okay, so and breaking that apart, we've been using it at our three high schools. And mostly I want to say that since we are student-driven and student-led, our program in the high schools, what's been really good with using these tools is we've formed our own leadership type group. So this has been a way that we've been able to implement letting the students take a more active role in running their own programming. So what that looks like is that we have a leader for each club that we have, and they come in and they actually do everything from the budgets to helping us pick out their staff to what kind of clubs they're going to have. And so this way they're very active. So there's your extremely, you know, active piece. We have them implemented in all the activities. And then also, you know, like I was saying, is they become the decision makers. So the collaboration starts with the students, and that reaches out into the administration, and with them also, like I said, working with their teachers and all. So we do a lot of partnerships. And I know that the piece that I had did for the quality assessment was we do a lot with community partnership too. So a lot of that is the students getting out and actually canvassing the community with us and finding where are they going to be able to help, where are they going to be able to maybe find a place, being that it's a 21st century grant, where are they going to be able to find maybe a new meeting place, sort of like clubhouse for them to be at, what kind of partners are going to come in and help them with different aspects of what they're doing, and if they are doing an art club, are they going to be able to go in and beautify and actually, you know, make signs and paint stores, are they going to be able to go in and as a band, as a you know, like the music club, are they going to be able to go in and hold their own concerts and stuff like that. So that's the piece that I was, you know, one of the pieces that we are really focusing on is getting out in the community and being really collaborative, not only, as I said, with the administration and with the students and teachers, but then on into the community. First, is there any questions on what I'm saying now? Everybody good? Can everybody hear me?
Yep.
Hello? Okay, good. Okay, so
just
want to make sure, you know, that this is, because if there's things that you guys want me to, since it's you know, so vast, if there's questions also that you have for me that's more poignant and not what I'm speaking on, but certainly feel free to ask me. Where it's looked over the last coming up on 5 years for us is that we've really developed to the point now where the students are now, we have clubs called college clubs, and where the students are going now is they're going off, we're getting them, and we're sort of taking over and helping where the counselors aren't being able to help them into college and help them with their further life plans. We're really seeing ourselves as the bridge, and then we're having students come back who have already gone off and gone to college and come back and working with those students. I know this is something that Sam was working on too, coming back and not only working with the students as far as tutoring and all, but actually getting jobs with us. So we're sort of doing this whole full circle, you know, with this model where they're coming back and they're becoming our club leaders. So that has been a really big piece that we've been able to put in now that we've seen them sort of, you know, go from ninth grade and graduate and come back around. And so with that, where they do is they go in and then they work with usually our elementary school. So we've been able to get them the skills, and they've honed their skills and developed their skills in whatever clubs that we have for them, and then they go back and they teach on those skills. So it's been a really nice piece. And that's sort of what we see as sort of like taking it in and maybe the fifth and last sort of like the horizon. So they've gone out and they've come back and they've kind of made it all this whole full circle. Let me see, what other points did you want me to speak on specifically?
Well, it would be helpful to hear a little bit about how actively you guys use these principles. It sounds like you're using them to frame how young people have a leadership role and decision-making role in your organization. And I think that's great. And it would be interesting to hear how actively or intentionally you're integrating these principles into what you do, or has it kind of gone the other way that you had these programs and now you can frame what you do within these principles? Do you know what I mean? It's either
right.
You designed it with the principles in mind, or you had this program designed and then you think, okay, how does this fit with the principles?
Yes, actually, it was sort of organic in the way that we were forming it. We already had these ideas, you know, to have a leadership role for the students and to have the high schools be completely, you know, youth-led, from youth-driven and the middle school where they're starting to make decisions to completely youth-led. And then using these principles, it did help us more to define how we were going to be able to sort of lay it out, you know. So it gave us a structure, but it was something that we were already implementing. So what it did was it sort of gave us also language for it, which was really nice. So this is really, I think, really accessible and easy language that we can also translate to the students. And we can say these are the kind of rules and the structure that we would like you to work within. So that's a really nice way to be able to use it, something that's understood, you know, across the board and be able to structure it and frame it. But really where it's really taken place and work with us most is with the leadership role of the students and being able, because we really believe that the only way we're going to be able to succeed in our high school programs is if the students are taking the lead on this and they're telling us what they want and what they need from us, more importantly. Because it's really changed. We're starting to be there enough where we're understanding that, you know, in some of our high schools, what they really need is where are they going to go? They see high school as sort of the end of the road for them.
Mm-hmm.
The undocumented students, the students that maybe didn't do as well in school, just the fact that they even have the grades and nobody has spoken to them about college or moving forward. So really being able to talk to them and put them in this role of letting them know that they can take charge of their life and that we're there to help them. Something that unfortunately hasn't been in the school too much of the last many years. So we've used that to sort of make a whole little community and be the bridge, see ourselves as the bridge between now and their future life. And that's how we're sort of like really putting this in place and the emphasis that we're having with it.
Okay. And do you guys have elementary school programs as well?
We do. We actually mainly have elementary school programs.
Oh, interesting. Okay, and then do you use the principles at all in the elementary school programs?
Yeah, what we try to do is do sort of lead on up. So we do this idea of being student-led programming, but it sort of gets more and more as they go up. So the way we're using that is being a sort of a collaborative piece and getting the students to understand their mastery and the elementary school would be where they're really working with their club leaders, hopefully, to tell them what they like and develop their cycle plans with them, which would be their lesson plans with them. So they get having the students have a little bit of hands-on in, you know, these are the principles, and we're using a lot of STEM right now. And so that's really playing a very big role in our elementary school and the mastery of the students and the critical thinking skills. And we're using a lot of vocabulary words and all, where we're telling the club leaders and all to go out and get words that are going to be the vocabulary words that the teachers are going to be using. We're doing this in elementary and middle school. Go out, get those words, familiarize the students by using them daily and whatever, you know, words or vocabulary words are correlating to the practices you do, you know, be that, you know, sports or art or what have you. And then so that they're familiarized with them and they're not afraid of these words and they're being able to use them. So that's a really big teaching tool that we've used and we fit in with this structure of sort of action. So they're taking it, you know, they're using the words and they're actually, it makes sense to them now. As well as science or technology. It makes sense because it's something that they see and they're identifying and they're understanding that they're doing it all the time. They understand that, you know, every time they decide, you know, how, you know, every time they draw a circle or a cylinder or something, that they're doing geometry now. So we're trying to be very intentional. I would say that that's probably, that would probably be the biggest piece, is that we've thrown away this disguised learning. We're not disguising anything anymore. We're being really intentional. And we want the students to know that we're being intentional, and we want the teachers and the admin to know that we're being intentional with it. So,
right. And you've got to feel like...
I'm sorry.
Is that so the intentionality towards reaching these principles or fulfilling these principles in your programming?
Yeah. Yes, and being very intentional with them. So instead of just saying, oh, we've got the information, but letting them know, this is the road we're going to go down, we're going to lay it out for you, and we're going to do this together. And I think that that's a really important piece, and I think that's sort of a piece that's kind of changed a little bit. You know, I've been in working after school for, since like 98, and before where it was all like, let's kind of hide this, let's think that it's all fun. It is all fun, and it is about being able to put, like you were saying earlier, to put in those missing pieces that there's academics are there. Let's not keep doing what has already not gotten the best result for 8 hours a day. Let's not do it for another three. But at least be very intentional on the fact that they are learning these principles while they're doing it.
Great. Does anyone else? I'm sorry, I've dominated the questions for Leon. Anyone else have questions for him?
Yeah, I had a question. I was interested in what had been said earlier about folks that had attended the after-school program of coming back and working in the after-school program. First, you know, did I understand that correctly? And if I did, what do you think? Why do you think that's happening? And what do you see as some of the strengths of that occurring?
That's what's happening, and that's sort of a goal that we have had and now been able to kind of see the fruition of that because of, you know, the amount of the years of the high school program being around and being able to follow through with that. There's two things. I think what's really important is letting these students know that there's a place for them in their community. And that the students know. So we're keeping it in the community. We're trying to develop and teach the community, and now we can go and give them jobs as well. shows sort of a full circle there, which I think is really important for the communities that we work in. And then also that they have gotten, in some cases, especially I'm trying to do more and more technology-based, they're actually training, we're calling them training clubs, so that we're training them in the skills that we can't find the instructors ourselves. So, you know, we look and we probably all have about the same demographic of young, maybe a couple first years out of school into college, and they're not being able to teach the technology on the level that that we want them to teach or understand it. And so what we're doing now is we're being able to actually teach them the skills that we need so that they can go out and teach again, and then also being very intentional by telling them that, you know, doing this, even if it's photography, if it's a video, if you know photography on the level we're going to teach it to you, you can go get a job for $14 an hour, or you can come get a job with us that we're teaching you marketable skills, and we're teaching you, in this case, technology, something that they're going to need, and they're not getting a lot of that during the school day.
So I have a follow-up question to it. What do you notice people, when they are leaving working in the after-school program, what sorts of professions are they moving on to?
You know, it really, we hire by specialty, which is a little different than I know some of the other organizations. So they're either going into that specialty. So if we want dance, we're hiring dancers and, you know, so on and so forth. Not that if we hired a sports person, they're going on to the MBA or anything. But, you know, for the rest of them, we have a lot of people that are there because they do want to be teachers. And then for our artists, for our people in technology and all, they are going on and trying to pursue, you know, that dream. And if it's something with the arts, we try to have them go on something that we know is a more a sellable skill or something that they can get. So if, let's say, they are graffiti artists, we say, have you thought about topology? Did you know that you can make fonts and make a lot of money making fonts? So we try to steer them a little bit in something that we know.
And of the folks that are going into teaching, are you starting to see them during the instructional day that they work in after school, and then they transition into a role as a credentialed teacher during the day?
You know, we haven't seen anybody go on that far yet. They're still, but we do have, you know, students that are definitely, you know, into a few years of college, but not yet.
Great.
Yeah.
Any other questions? So thank you so much, Leon. Thanks for taking the time to share that. It's really interesting. Yes, there are more questions.
This is Adrian. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Hi. Leon, so about 10 minutes ago, you talked a little bit about hiring, and you talked about including young people in hiring. And right now in the Sacramento area, people are asking questions like, how do we hire people that use the youth development approach? And how do we hire people who naturally get how to create collaborative learning environments, how to create youth voice, and really encourage that expansion of horizons? And so my question to you is, how do you do that? How do you hire that right person? Because quite honestly, and I don't mean to say anything negative here, but I will say that certificate often isn't an indicator that this person is ready to practice this approach with young people. And so how do you find that right person who gets this approach and wants to make this approach happen?
No, I have to say that we have the same struggle here. I think that is difficult. And what we do is we do a lot of training. They aren't necessarily ready, and if they're good at one thing, does not mean that they're, you know, if they're good at their skill and they're good, sort of like kid magnet, does not mean that they have all of the classroom management skills they might need, and might not know how to, as you're saying, work on this well-rounded level that we're hoping for, that we're learning. And so what we do is we do continual training with them. We have sort of a week-long training when they come in, and then we come back and they do a few trainings the site coordinators do the training every month. And then the that idea is that that filters down into the club leaders, and then the club leaders themselves, as well as we have consultants that work in whatever domain it might be, so visual arts, right, performing arts, science, and then go and then train them to work, and then other special trainings. I guess the word is a lot of training. Other trainings,
yeah,
along classroom management and all. So we're not being able to find them sort of like, you know, cooked, you know, out of the oven. You know, but since they grew up, since they kind of, and I mean really grew up with it, because, you know, if you've worked in high school, it's just amazing, right? You see them in ninth grade and then they're in 12th grade and you're like, wow. Dude, you know? So they grew up in it, and they understand that, and they've gotten to our leadership, so they understand already the idea of this is a joint learning experience, which is, you know, using the model. This is a joint learning experience where we're going to be touching on all these different levels. We're going to want this interactive, you know. We're going to want to be collaborative with everybody. So they've been around it. And so they're really mimicking what they've been around. And that's a really great way. We found that these are some of our, by far, you know, best instructors. We start them in high school with a stipend. You know, we can't hire them, but we give them a stipend. And the managers, like, can't wait for them to turn 18 and get a diploma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because just being around the program.
Yeah.
And that's another piece, too, is giving them the stipend and letting them kind of work a few hours and work it out while they have a club leader next to them.
I love that. That is an excellent model, and I love that you mentioned training. One quick follow-up. I apologize. I don't want to dominate this, but if there is something that you're looking for when you're hiring, is it skill? Is it attitude? What are you looking for at the point of bringing someone on board?
I think that more than anything, because you know, once we know they have the skill, then really it's like, can they relate on the level that the students are going to want to work with them? I mean, do they understand kids, and can they transmit that sort of like wanting to teach? Because if they have that passion, I guess we hire for the passion. If they have that passion, and depending on what level they're at, you know, elementary school, yes, we still hire an artist if they say they're an artist, but it's not the same as high school. High school, we mostly hire a lot for skills. Probably in high school, most for skills and less for, are you just sort of have that, I don't even know what to call it. I still call it the X factor. I don't know what to call it. But, you know, that draw that, you know, students trust you and want to be around you, you know. But in middle school, I almost solely, if you've got that, I can probably have enough consultants around, enough projects around that, you know, I can build up your skills as an artist or as a soccer player or whatever.
I love that. Thank you. Great.
And to that point, Adrian, I think something else you mentioned is really key to that hiring piece. And when I used to run a youth agency in the Mission District, we also had kids interviewing staff, potential staff, and they can identify the X factor way better than I could. So we definitely hired some people who I would not have hired because they didn't, you know, to me I was worried about reliability or their resume wasn't as strong in this or that area. So I was looking more at kind of the paper, and the kids would push me and just say, you know, this is what we liked about him. And it would be something, you know, once they'd explained it wasn't flaky, it was very clear. And often those would be the best hires because they had that draw that kids could identify that I wasn't seeing because they're not a, you know, old.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that kids on the hiring committee, if you can get that past whatever rules the organization or the district has, is really helpful.
Right.
And it has to be structured and kids have to be trained to do it and, you know, take them seriously if you've invited them into that process, obviously.
Right.
But it can be a really good way to catch that X factor.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, you nailed it. That was that's exactly right. They pick up, they know, you know. And that's what the kids are gonna go see, you know. That's who they're gonna wanna get something from.
Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Leon. So I'm also curious about other folks on the phone. I know we have a lot of people who work with a whole variety of
program. And I'm interested to see how do you see these learning and after-school principles manifested in the programs that you work with? Because Leon's talked very, very well about, you know, one way around promoting and framing youth leadership really across the spectrum from elementary school to high school, and that's one way these principles really can help form a program like that. How else have you seen the principles used in the work that you do?
No, I just want to say I wanted to excuse myself and thank you all, and I'm really sorry I have to leave and get in on another meeting, but I look forward to being on the next call, and thank you all for, you know, indulging in my experience.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye. Thank you.
This is Jen Lillienstein. I work with a lot of different schools, and the way that I've seen it applied both in out-of-school time as well as what it's starting to do in during school hours is that, you know, there's the content that they're looking to deliver during their program, but these are kind of the facets that they need to make sure that they address of those particular content jewels, so that way, you know, that the learning can really sparkle for the kids. Because if you don't get all these different kinds of facets, then it just, you know, it's a jewel in the rough. It's not something that they're really going to want to go for.
Great, thanks. One way that, you know, I have seen folks use these principles is in conversation with school site administrators. Because there's often a disconnect between what a principal wants out of the after school, an initial disconnect between what a principal wants out of the after school program and what this, in particular, community-based organizations believe that they are delivering. But I think that these principles help to sort of define the common ground between those two perspectives, because they are things that any educator would want for kids. And when pushed to have a real conversation about what kids need, I think everyone ends up in a very similar spot. And as Leon was saying, it provides this common language. In his context, it was common language to kids. But I also think it's a really important common language between the school day and the out-of-school time world. Has that been anyone's experience?
I think I just want to piggyback onto that, and maybe I just want to keep Corey busy doing crosswalks from now until the end of time. But, you know, one of the things you're saying is common language, which also reminds me of Common Core. And when you look at Common Core state standards and what their area of emphasis is, there's going to be a lot of overlap with the principles of learning in after school. And although site and district administrators, that common language of learning in after school and seeing those principles will be of interest, they'll really be motivated to understand that if somebody can make a clear line between here are the principles and this is why they matter for Common Core state standards.
Mm. And Marcella, in your experience with Common Core, do they line up?
Yeah, there's a huge area in which they line up. So kind of the analogy that I often draw is, and now I've lost his first name, John Wooden. So he was a basketball coach for UCLA. And part of it is, you know, I live in a world where I cannot malign any efforts on either side of the bell. So one of the things that John Wooden was famous for was when players originally came, he would teach them how to properly put on their socks and shoes and tie their shoelaces. But the point of all of that was to actually learn how to play the game of basketball and to do it successfully. So there's a focus on fundamentals. And what No Child Left Behind has done is there's been this uber focus on those fundamentals of kind of like putting on your shoes and socks properly. So we've really focused on English, language arts, and math. And what Common Core does, it gets us to refocus on can we play the game? Are we able to apply that learning? So there's a renewed focus on critical thinking, collaborative learning together. So you're going to see a lot of common ground. Those of us who are a bit gray around the temples, education is often seen as something that is monolithic and does not move. But the truth of the matter is it does, and it moves pretty rapidly. So when I first started teaching, the methodology of how I taught looks very much more similar to how the instructional strategies and the curriculum used in after school than it does during the instructional day. And I think that the Common Core state standards, there's going to be another shift. And it's important to know that one is not necessarily better than the other. Some are more conducive to some people. The hope is, how do you get that pendulum to kind of hang out in the middle for at least a brief period of time? So my point being, long-winded this time, is that learning in after school has a lot of common ground with Common Core state standards, and that will be a conversation that during the instructional day they'll be very interested to hear, because that's answering a question that they now have. So, and there's, you know, lots of details, particularly in assessment, that they're going to be much more interested in how children learn hands-on, experientially, are able to apply their learning, really synthesize their learning, and be able to do those higher-order thinking skills that maybe were not as critically addressed when you're focusing on basics. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, and thanks, Marcel, so much for that. And I think that's really tapping into, you know, one of the things that draws me to the learning and after-school principles is that it is a positive statement of what can be, that can establish that shared interest and common purpose, rather than just saying no, because that's, you know, just you're not going to have a fruitful conversation if the either undertone or overtone is, hey there, school day, you guys are just messing up terribly, so let's fix you, but rather, you know.
I finally said stop listening.
I'm sorry?
I find when you tell anybody that what they're doing is wrong, they tend to stop listening.
Yeah, funny how that works, right?
Yeah.
And that just really reaffirming, and I think there are very few teachers who delight in bored, annoyed, unengaged kids, right?
Yeah. Right.
And so I think, Marcel, you know, as you said, that, you know, with the Common Core standards being more about, more focused on learning and on the process of learning, it's going to be a mutual journey to take,
right,
rather than, you know, one group or the other having all the answers and just not sharing them.
Yeah, and actually, you know, I'm always looking for windows of opportunity to how do you kind of move a message forward to get more buy-in. This, in this case, if learning in after school is aligned with Common Core state standards, It's no longer a window of opportunity. It's like a door of opportunity. And then that can be something, because in after school, the truth of it is there is really no accountability for academic achievement associated with after school. During the instructional day, there's huge accountability, and principals are let go on a regular basis based on a lack of academic achievement. So what that allows is in after school, you can play to fail, and failure is an important part of innovation, because a breakthrough idea before it's successful is just a crazy idea. So in after school, you can try these kind of crazy ideas and see if it's successful. And then if you can prove this works after school with these children, then it's an easy sell during the instructional day, because oftentimes during the instructional day, and rightfully so, you know, these are teachers who are just doing their darn best, it's too easy to say, yeah, that would be successful, but they don't have the same population that we have with the challenges that they have. Well, if it's the very same children, then it takes off the table any of that pushback of this can't work. So when you're able to use the after school as kind of a pilot of let's show you how this could work here with educators who are not formally trained, with less funding, and with the same children. And then if it's successful here, you can move it into the instructional day. So Common Core state standards with learning in after school presents kind of not a window of opportunity, but a huge door to be able to move it forward. But just like what you were saying, Corey, is that part of that messaging has to be, you guys have been really successful at teaching the fundamentals. There's been an increase of test scores, but with this shift, let's show you some of the things that we've done that we find have found successful and can be successful with implementing Common Core.
Right. Really quick, this is Adrian, and I think one thing to quickly bring into the conversation is I love that we're talking about the in-school day and the after-school day. I think what's been really helpful in terms of the conversation here in Sacramento with ACOS Systems and Services is really what's the world that our young people are inheriting. And when you think about that, and the jobs that they'll have, they're no longer asking for professional test takers, right? They're asking for critical thinkers. They're asking for creativity, and they're asking for effective communication in the workplace. And the after-school program is so, you know, what we're talking about here. I mean, these conversations should be happening for all young people in all services and systems, if you ask me. But I think it's good to have a conversation, think about, let's put youth at the center, and let's think about the world that they're about to inherit as adults, and what do they need. And mm-hmm. The more we can say that the after-school world is providing that critical bridge between where they're at right now and their transition into adulthood, I think it's interesting to have that conversation with key stakeholders in your community.
Yeah. And is that a conversation, because, Adrian, the overlap between, I think what's interesting is the overlap between youth development and learning and after-school principles, right? They're extremely overlapped. Have you found that you're shifting the way you're talking about it, or how are you incorporating these into the ongoing youth development conversation that I know you've been having for years, and Sam obviously comes completely out of that framework as well. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think I understand your question. It's how do we infuse this conversation into the youth development world?
Yeah. But you have an ongoing conversation. It's been going on for years, and here's something new, similar, but a little different.
Well, it's very interesting in terms of here in the Sacramento region. There's a lot of conversation of really making sure that our young people are prepared for college, work, and life, right? And when we think about preparing them for college, work, and life, it's been the business community that has really stepped up and said, hey, schools and after-school programs, we're hiring for these things. How are you giving young people those skills? And that's really led into a conversation about modalities in the classroom, modalities after school. What are the things that we're giving our young people in terms of starting to become those critical thinkers, starting to think creatively, and really practicing effective communications in small group work, right? And what years ago we used to call tribes work. But I think it's been interesting for people to start exploring that and to say, hey, young people working in groups is a really good thing. And not only does it work after school, but it works in school as well. And it's what the world that they're about to inherit is calling for. And it's turbulent. People feel like it's a changing of a guard conversation, but quite honestly, it's a conversation that needs to be happening. And I think there's a way of having that conversation in a very positive, asset-based way.
Great. So what is interesting is I'm just tracking this conversation. We've talked about how the learning and after-school principles can impact or support work with high school youth and create a common understanding of where they're going and where they need to be going so that they can have that conversation themselves. We've talked about how learning and after-school principles can help administrators understand the common and after-school folks understand their common ground around the Common Core and the learning and after-school principles. And now we've talked about how it relates to what the business community is identified as needing from its future workforce, which is currently young people. So it's interesting that, you know, across these three different audiences, these principles have an application. Are there other audiences that we think that this the conversation framed around these five principles is helpful to, and then if so, what other tools would be needed to have that conversation and push this agenda forward more effectively? That was a two-part question.
I would say we really need to talk with parents.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
I would say we really need to talk it with the parents.
Ah.
I like that.
And how do you see that? Where would a tools or a forum for that take place?
That's a lot of what we do on our site. But, you know, I mean, there's so much that can be done with discussions with the after-school program coordinators and just, you know, more of a, this is what they learned today in after school, here's how you can apply those same kinds of principles, not only in extending the learning that they learned in after school, but, you know, they're getting so excited about the learning in after school because we're applying these principles that you might want to take these into context when you're helping with homework.
I think it would also help to frame then their expectations of what the after-school program is providing. There's that tension of what parents are hoping their kids will come home with or not, and really helping them understand the bigger picture of support that is provided beyond getting homework done that day.
Yep. Well, I mean, I think that there's so much of an education that needs to happen within the parenting community, just the same way it needed to happen with the during-school time community about how, you know, after school isn't just about getting homework done and babysitting. It's really about inspiring your kids in ways that they may not get inspired during the school day.
Great. Any other audiences that are missed in our conversation so far that it would be interesting to think about how these principles could be used with?
I know there's a lot of momentum right now in the faith-based world who they actually do a lot of very neat after-school programs and weekend programs, and they're having this conversation, but unfortunately, from what I've seen, it's been behind closed doors, and they haven't been part of community settings, at least here in Sacramento. Mm. But they're having really clever, robust dialogue about this, and they're holding each other accountable to it.
Great. Okay. Does anyone have any other questions or comments related to our conversation today?
Great call.
Ditto.
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting conversation. You know, I would really encourage folks, if you haven't already, and I know a bunch of people on here have obviously already signed on and, you know, checked out the website, but to look at it some more and think about how it relates to the specific work you're doing. It's something we at the partnership are really actively doing, and we've got this whole statewide initiative around summer learning, and that's such a rich area for these principles. You know, we're still honestly struggling to fit these puzzle pieces in with all the other puzzle pieces that exist in everything that we do, but I do think there's so much potential for a common and united perspective on the contributions that we make to this field and how that's communicated to all the different audiences we talked about today. There's a lot more, obviously, work to be done and ways to translate this to each of those different audiences and to give tools to people like me to be able to do that translation easily. But I really appreciate the thought that went into framing this, and Corey, your participation today to help explain it to us and feed the conversation we've had. Marcella, do you want to talk about what's coming up next with the committee?
Yes, you can look, hopefully on your agenda, you can see the upcoming dates. So for January, the next focus will be on family and community partnerships. And then we have two additional dates, March 20th and May 15th. And I think in just kind of thinking about the conversation today, what's interesting is this would be a great day to kind of mark your calendar of when this was an idea and to be able to track how it kind of flows out from here. Because I think this is one idea that we're going to see spread rather rapidly, and we'll be able to track how it becomes integrated, not just throughout after-school programs, but how those principals start to come alive during the instructional day, too. So it's pretty exciting to kind of be privy to some of those first conversations, although this work has been underway for quite a while. So I think that's it from here. What a productive time, and it's always a delight to be able to chat with all of you on the phone and to hear some of the good work that's being done out in the state of California.
Thank you all very much.
Okay, that's it. So goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.